Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, and graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Andrew.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Comic Sage, and the old man comics over there, Mick.
Hello. Although we did establish last week that I am Deadpool.
But we also established yesterday that you are definitely an old man as well.
All right, I'm old man Deadpool. Oh, I like that. That's a comic I'd read.
I mean, that's a comic that's almost definitely going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
Because you've had Old Man Logan, Old Man Hawkeye, and now they're doing Old Man Star-Lord, apparently.
Yeah. It all started off with Old Man Hulk, or as he's also known, the Maestro, putting on airs and graces, in that Future Imperfect thing they did ages ago. But Marvel do like their old men.
Well, it's probably a homage to their erstwhile creator and owner and all-round omnipresent being. Stan Lee. That's what they need, a comic based on old man Stan Lee.
Sorry, I just had a mental image of Stan Lee sitting on his porch shouting at cars.
Which I believe is what he does when he's not filming cameos.
That does sound plausible.
So what are we talking about today, Andrew?
Well, I figured now that we've done our spooky, scary Halloween stuff, we should turn our eye to something that's been out for a couple of weeks now. Daredevil Season 3.
Ooh. Yes. Oh, I should have watched it, really. I kid.
Yeah, I've watched about three quarters of it.
See, you kid, but you kid like we haven't had shows where I said, we're talking about this for you to turn and go, yeah, I haven't read or seen this.
Yeah, but at that point, I then become the questioning voice, you see. I become the person who can say, but I don't understand, why did that happen? And you can explain it to me in condescending tones that only you can manage.
In fact, that is a fun format for the show. Mick, pretend like you haven't seen Daredevil Season 3, so that could be condescending.
Okay. Hey, Andrew, what happens in Daredevil Season 3?
Well, thanks for asking, Mick. It's really good of you to show an interest.
So, I have an inquiry in mind.
So to put it in terms that you can understand, Daredevil Season 3 picks up after, well, basically the end of The Defenders. Oh, and also, side note, this is going to be like full-on spoilers for the season, I reckon, since it has been out for a few weeks now.
Yeah, and if you haven't watched, if you're a Daredevil fan, you'll have marathoned it by now.
Yeah, I think either you've probably marathoned it or you're not that fussed about spoilers.
Yeah.
So, end of Defenders, which, by the way, you don't really need to have seen. If you haven't, all you need to know is that at the end of that, Daredevil seemingly died when a building collapsed, only for him to not actually be dead, because that would be a weird season if he was, and has been taken in by the convent where he was raised and kind of healed back up to full health. And so while he's recovering, he decides he's going to give up life as Matt Murdock and just Daredevil about all the time. Meanwhile, his old enemy Wilson Fisk decides he's going to start cooperating with the FBI, but is he really, or is he actually playing them? He's actually playing them so that he can get out of prison and start re-establishing himself as the kingpin of crime. And to help him do that, he enlists the aid of an FBI agent called Benjamin Poindexter, played by Wilson Blethel, who starts dressing up as an evil version of Daredevil to discredit him. And that's basically the plot of the season.
And that's your simple version, yeah?
Yeah, that's the simple version. I mean, to be fair, I wouldn't say it's an overly complicated season.
No, to be fair, it's not. I preferred it to season two.
Oh, yeah, I think I would say in my rankings, it's probably one, three, then two.
I liked two for its directness. I think this one was a bit more... I think season three, so far, I mean, I haven't finished it yet, but so far it's been a bit more... it's been a bit more convoluted, I'd say. I like season two because it was very, very direct, but then again, it was The Punisher, and I am a big fan.
And I think that's what spoiled it for me, because we knew there was a Punisher series coming.
Yeah.
When season two came out, it felt like it was more sort of season 0.5 of The Punisher than Daredevil season two.
Yeah, I got what you mean.
And therefore, the directness felt right, whereas after season one of Wilson Fisk shenanigans in Daredevil, you expected a certain convolution to the plots, the sort of constant sort of trying to wrong foot at each other and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, so, basically Daredevil is at its best when it's Matt Murdock and Wilson Fisk sort of playing off each other, trying to outmaneuver the get one up.
Yeah, certainly for me, I prefer it that way.
I like it like that. I'll be honest, I do like the, well, it's kind of a physical battle of wits, and I know that's an oxymoron to say it like that, but that's effectively what it is, isn't it?
Mm. And I think the other thing is, it's one of those few formats that you've got where they like to keep you guessing about who the bad guys actually are and whether they are as bad as they appear to be without you either not seeing the connections because they throw something in that's so unconnected to the rest of the plot that you just go away going, oh, come on. Or it's so they make it so obvious what the connections are that you've guessed what the reality is about three scenes or sometimes three episodes before they reveal it.
Yeah, this is true. I'll be honest, though, season three has been a godsend after The Defenders.
Yeah, I mean, I think The Defenders was such a wasted opportunity, especially when you consider that.
It's what I've said before, but I'll say it again. I enjoyed Defenders, but I think I didn't enjoy it as much as I should have to have made it worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
It's like in the run-up to any of the new Marvel Netflix shows that look like they're going to link up to another one, I generally binge-watch the previous stuff from the related series. But Defenders, that would have meant binge-watching some more Iron Fist, and that ain't ever going to happen.
Go on, you know you want to.
No. If I could take out all the bits with Iron Fist in, I might watch Iron Fist, because every other character in Iron Fist is more interesting than Iron Fist.
Well, yeah, actually. I still don't understand why they didn't just cast a martial artist in the role of Iron Fist. There are plenty to choose from.
But that still wouldn't have made the character more interesting.
Well, it would have made the action scenes more interesting, at the very least.
Yeah. But yeah, I've come out of the Iron Fist series. I've come out of that wanting to see more of Misty Knight.
Yes.
And less of Iron Fist. So, heed that, ABC Studios.
It's almost a shame, because I feel like at the end of Iron Fist Season 2, they finally just said, fine, no one likes Danny Rand. Colleen is the Iron Fist now.
Yeah.
And then it got cancelled.
Yeah. Or did it? Or did it just get moved to a new network?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be like Lucifer or something like that.
Yeah, no, I feel like legally Marvel probably can't just start doing it on their streaming app.
Yeah.
Because I think it's made like, it's Netflix that actually made it.
Yeah.
At least I think. I don't know.
No, because it was ABC Studios that made it. And they're owned by Marvel. Well, Disney.
Yeah.
So maybe it will.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Not Matt Murdock, that's true.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really like this series.
I've got to say, what's his name? The guy who plays Bullseye. He was a lot better than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, I think he did a good job. He had this kind of a weird twitchiness to him that I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Like you can see just in every scene where he has to act like a normal human being. It always looks really uncomfortable.
Do you know who he kind of reminded me of? It was like he was channeling Christian Bale from American Psycho.
Yeah, that kind of sort of very intense kind of energy.
Yeah.
Also, I think they did a really good job with him actually doing Bullseye stuff.
Yes, they did.
I think my worry in the first episode he appeared in, because he just shot a bunch of people, and you know, this Bullseye is just going to be some dude who is good at guns. But then you get the bit where like he dresses up as Daredevil and attacks the I forget what the newspaper's called, the Bulletin. That's it.
Yeah, Bulletin.
Yeah, and he's doing stuff like he's just picking up pencils and hurling them. There's a great bit where like Daredevil's got him in a chokehold, so he just like chucks a pair of scissors behind him into Matt's shoulder.
I love that bit. That was so cool and so well done.
Yeah, it was just everything about Bullseye, just grabbing stuff and using improvised weaponry. It was everything I wanted to see.
That it bears something. I read there was a guy who was doing like an analysis of Bullseye on YouTube a while ago, and there was a comment he made about Bullseye. He said Bullseye is one of those rare characters that you see in a comic book who. Anything can be a weapon to them. You know, as long as he can pick it up, anything can be a weapon to him.
Yeah, and that's that's just visually something that's really interesting to see.
Yep, totally agree on that.
Yeah, and that's a really good way of tackling what I think is one of just the MCU in general's biggest problems, which is having a villain who can still have like a one-on-one fight with the hero.
Yeah.
Without just being that hero, but bad.
Which,
even if in the series he was bad Daredevil.
Yeah.
But basically, I mean, he's got something to actually make that fight interesting.
It's basically the Punisher, isn't it? It's like he says in the in season two, you're only one bad day away from being me.
I guess, but I mean more in terms of, like in Black Panther, when the final fight is just two Black Panthers punching each other a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot more interesting to see Daredevil have to, like, duck and dive around as Bullseye's just, like, hurling random office supplies at him.
And you just know some stationery companies, you know, they paid Marvel a fortune to have their stationery in that office.
Oh, I just remembered one of my other favourite bits is, like, when they're fighting in a church and Bullseye just picks up a collection disc and hurls it like a frisbee.
Yeah, that was cool. I really liked that.
It's like a nice food noise.
I'll tell you, the audio effects were a lot better in season three than in the first two seasons. Maybe it's just paying attention to them, but I thought they were a lot more effective. And what the word is? You know when they do like sound effects and they just make sense. They're logical and they make sense and they fit what you think that is going to sound like. The Foley, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'll certainly take your word for that.
Sorry, it's just something I pay attention to because I'm dealing with sound mainly.
Oh, yeah, this is a thing I've had to learn to my detriment. Rob is a big old audio nerd.
He is, isn't he?
I mean, you two were literally having like a 10-minute conversation about different types of equipment just before the show started.
That's true.
I had a tiny, tiny nap.
I do apologise for that, Andrew. I thought it was news worth sharing, but I'll pick my moments in future. I'll wait till Rob's asleep.
And just tell Andrew.
No. You wait till I'm asleep.
Well, that's barely waiting at all, Andrew.
Yeah, that's not.
All we have to do is pause our conversation for 30 seconds. You'll think we've stopped recording and that'll be it. You'll be in hibernation mode.
Oh, great. The show's over. Okay, good job, guys. See you next week. Night.
Andrew is now in standby mode. Oh, so
I'm basically my old laptop. In that case, I'll just go, no, I'm sleepy now. I'm taking a rest.
Yeah, I had a laptop like that. Then I found out it was twitchy jack that was soldered onto the motherboard. So I had to leave it in one place and couldn't actually touch it.
Twitchy Jack. That's going to be a villain in my next comic.
Twitchy Jack. He's an assassin. He turns people off.
It'll be loosely based on Lex Luthor from the Batman vs. Superman film.
Yes. So everyone enjoyed Daredevil season 3 then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's probably one complaint. And I think it is actually about Bullseye. And it just, I wasn't a fan of a lot of his backstory stuff.
Yeah, it seemed a bit,
yeah.
It seemed like they were trying a bit too hard.
Yeah, because to explain it, basically the idea in the show is that Bullseye is able to be manipulated by the Kingpin because he basically suffers from mental health problems. Like he has real difficulty empathizing with other people and has massive anger issues. First of all, I think there's probably a conversation to be had about how mental illness gets portrayed on screen.
Yep.
But to be honest, I definitely feel like we're probably not the right people to be going into that.
No.
Yeah.
So I think mainly what I want to say is from a TV perspective, I just don't think it adds anything.
I never understood why they felt the need to include that angle. Why not just make him? I referenced American Psycho, right? But they never really tried to explain American Psycho, at least in the film anyway, if I remember correctly. They never really tried to explain why he was like that. He just was.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good comparison. Because what they've done is obviously they've put this backstory in, just I assume because Kingpin works in this, because he's a complicated character, therefore we also need to make Bullseye complicated.
Yeah.
But He's not. He's just a bad guy who kills people because that's what he likes doing.
Yeah, and that's how he's written in the comics.
And that's how he's written in, like, all his action scenes in the TV show. And it's just a lot of it falls flat. Especially all the stuff with the, what's the name? What was it? Julie, I think. Yeah, but basically, the woman that he, well, I say has a crush, but with this really doesn't really have a crush on her. It's more he wants her to help, like, guide him morally.
Yeah.
But then she just gets, like, killed off and sort of shoved to the side for most of the season.
Yeah.
Until Bullseye finds out she's dead in the final episode and goes, oh, I'm mad at the Kingpin now. But, like, that could have been anything.
And then he uses that classic line that you always use with a girl that you want to do something for you, which is, oh, I didn't fancy you.
I think it's that, oh, my God, was Bullseye negging her?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, now I'm just imagining, like, in the Bullseye costume, but with a tiny fedora on top.
Sorry, that's a...
Oh, man, but then you could throw it like Odd Job.
Exactly. Oh. Sorry, when you said he could throw it like Odd Job, my brain went, so he'd be called Oddball.
I mean, there is already a Marvel character called Oddball, who is basically Bullseye, but juggling balls.
Now we know how the progression went to come up with that character.
Oh, also, there was one other thing I wanted to talk about, which is a decision I thought was really good of the show, in that, unlike what I thought was going to happen, they didn't kill off Karen Page.
Yeah.
Which, I kind of wanted it just as a, because that's the thing that happened in the comics. But no, keeping her around is definitely the right choice. Because, like, she does have that great dynamic with Matt and Foggy. And I think killing her off wouldn't have added anything. Like, the season starts, Daredevil already has all the motivation he needs to try and take down the Kingpin. And I think if she'd killed off Karen, that wouldn't have resonated because he didn't need another reason to, like, swear vengeance on Kingpin and Bullseye.
I mean, the only step he could take if they did kill Karen Page off is to kill Wilson Fisk and Bullseye. That would be the logical progression if he's already doing everything he can to take Wilson Fisk and Bullseye down, and then they kill Karen Page and he swears vengeance. The next stage is that he becomes like the Punisher.
Yeah, but actually, the whole point of this series was him starting to lean towards that, okay, maybe I just need to kill the Kingpin, because that's the only way I can stop this. So even that, like, that would have just... I mean, it's a point you actually even get to that in the final episode, because... Daredevil is working with, like, this FBI agent who is going to flip on Kingpin and, like, help him take him down, only for him to get killed in episode 9. Episode 12. It's 13 episodes. And then in the final episode, Daredevil goes, right, okay, that means my only option is to kill the Kingpin now, which he then doesn't do. So, yeah. Well done, show, and not, like, pointlessly killing off a character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, also, final thought, the prison fight scene is rad as hell.
Yeah.
Because it's basically the kind of Daredevil staple of the big hallway,
yeah,
sort of one long shot fighting scene. Which, but it's like, it's Matt having to escape a prison while there's, like, a full-blown riot going on.
You know the interesting thing, right? They've done it 3 times in each of the seasons of Daredevil, yeah?
So yeah.
Season 1 had it, season 2 had it, season 3 had it. And then they did it as well in Defenders, but I did not enjoy the Defenders one as much as I enjoyed the Daredevil versions.
Yeah, I feel like it's because in Defenders that they still had to kind of do a bit of cutting around to make the choreography work.
Yeah, it's just in the Daredevil series, when they do those long takes, there's a visceral nature to them which was missing from the Defenders. The Defenders just felt very, very kind of... It's like all the sharp edges and all the corners had been rounded off to make it child-friendly.
But I think one of the things that I didn't like about the Defenders was that they seemed to be kind of playing it safe.
Yeah.
It was almost like, let's do a Marvel series by the numbers. There didn't seem to be any real passion in terms of the production of it.
Yeah, I think that's the difference. In Daredevil, like, the big hallway fight scene is a thing that you look forward to. It's like them saying, hey, we know you've been excited for this bit, so here it is.
Yeah.
Whereas in Defenders, it feels more like a, hey, I remember the hallway fight scenes. They're fun, aren't they? This is our obligatory one.
Yeah.
Do you like, please like it.
That's exactly what it felt like. So, you know.
So, I'm ready for Daredevil Season 4.
That's great, Mick, except also there might not be one.
I know. But we're getting Punisher Season 2, right?
Yep, we are definitely getting Punisher Season 2 because that's kind of already been agreed upon.
See, I'm but not...
there's a strong rumour that that might be like the last Netflix Marvel thing.
Yeah. I'm not quite ready for Daredevil Season 4 because I've got 3 episodes left. Oh,
what also... about Jessica Jones Season 3?
I mean, I guess. Didn't like Season 2.
Also, just...
But didn't like Season 2 to the point that it's put me right off that show.
Really? Hang on, is this another Agent Carter for you?
I mean, Season 2 of Agent Carter was just very disappointing.
Yeah.
But I was still kind of hopeful for a third season. Jessica Jones Season 2 is just left me thinking, I really don't care if the show comes back or not.
Yeah, I want it to, but I want it to go back to being as good as Season 1.
See, Season 1 was great. I haven't seen Season 2 yet. It's just Andrew told me that the second season basically pooed the bed. And I thought, okay, maybe I'll just stick with Season 1 then.
I mean, I kind of liked it. I wasn't. It wasn't as good as Season 1 by a long way. But I felt that about Daredevil Season 2 as well.
I think for me, it's just, I really, really hate the fact that, and you know, this is going to be a spoiler, but it's quite an old series now, that the villain is Jessica Jones's mum. Like, it just feels like such a forced attempt to say, oh, well, Jessica had, like, this really personal relationship to the Purple Man, so we've got to find a way to do that again.
Yeah.
And it's, like, just such a ridiculous soap opera twist.
Hang on. Isn't the, you know, one of the parents or both of the parents being the villain just... I thought they'd given up on that after, like, Arrow and Heroes and, like, other shows like that where...
No, it's back now, baby. Oh, but also, God. Maybe she's just misunderstood. But maybe she isn't. But maybe she is. But maybe she isn't. But maybe she is. But maybe she is. Oh, no, wait, Trisha, shut up.
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe her mum's evil.
But we're all agreed. We're not that fussed about Iron Fist, yeah?
There's no argument there.
And to be honest, Luke Cage Season 2 was basically Luke Cage Season 1.
Yes.
I feel like at least it was Luke Cage Season 1, but without accidentally killing off the best part of that halfway through.
Yeah, this is true.
Also, I liked Bushmaster's capoeira stuff.
Yeah. And the thing is, I didn't mind... I quite liked Luke Cage Season 2 because, at the end of the day, I enjoyed Season 1 even with the stupid costume.
Yeah. Oh,
that costume was stupid.
Ghetto Stormtrooper.
He described it as that ages ago, and lose it every time I think.
Oh no, I think that's what they call them in the show.
Yes, it is.
Which I'm so confused as to. But if you knew the costume looked bad, why not just not?
See,
like, this is possibly the one and only time I will advocate for. Okay, maybe he should have just been a man in a leather jacket.
Yes,
but we know. We know, don't we, that comic book production companies don't think on those lines. If they did, someone would have said, but we can't afford to do the special effects after episode 1 on the Inhumans.
Well, the thing is, what they should have done when they were coming up with, I've forgotten his name, not Diamondback, oh, bloody hell, what was his name again?
Bushmaster.
No, the main bad guy, the big bad from season 1.
Yeah, that was Diamondback.
Was it Diamond? Because the thing is, for me, Diamondback, the first Diamondback that I encountered in Marvel Comics was the woman who eventually got together with Captain America and they had a kid.
Fun fact, that's actually the exact same character.
What?
No, it isn't, Rob. Luke Cage's brother did not at some point just like transform into a random white woman.
You're talking about 90s comics. Where they took the Punisher and...
I know, that's why I said it, because it was hilariously plausible within comics.
That's why I just froze and said, what? Because I could see that happening. Don't do that to me. I read too many 90s comics. So anyway, what they should have done when they were coming up with Diamondback's costume, they should just look at it. And you know that, you know, in the first episode where he's wearing the leather, the yellow shirt, and he's got the thing on his head, and he looks in the mirror, looks in the window, and goes, "I look like a damn fool." Yep. They should have just played that.
That could have even been a fun callback if he'd put it on, also said, "I look like a damn fool."
Yeah, exactly.
And just like taking it off again. I mean, just, I don't know, just like give him a yellow t-shirt and a green jacket. That's good enough.
Yes.
Or maybe just a helmet that actually fits his head.
That was the other thing I saw. Somebody likened Diamondback with the helmet on to Dark Helmet from Spaceballs. There is only one man who will raspberry my radar. Luke Cage!
I think we have to take a break now so that I can, like, storm off and yell about Diamondback into the night sky.
Yes. We'll be back soon.
Have you still not found a new hobby?
Look, if you find something that works, you stick with it.
I'll have you know, Howling at the Moon is actually quite enjoyable.
Yeah, but it doesn't always have to be about Diamondback, does it?
No, sometimes you just howl.
Mm. And sometimes it's about the movie Looper.
Yeah, it's true.
I think even Jamie Bell howls at the sky about that. No, not Jamie Bell.
I'm thinking of Jumper.
I'm thinking of Jumper.
Yep.
I mean, it is quite chilly, so I'll forgive you.
Hi, I'm Matt Gibbs. I'm the managing editor of Improper Books, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
Hi, it's Dave from Geek Corner. If you really love cosplay and you like to get dressed up as your favourite characters from TV and movies, whatever it is that you like to dress as, get yourselves down to Geek Corner in Stockton-on-Tees in the Regency West Mall. We actually make cosplay props and costuming props. They're generally made from foam and stuff, so they're perfectly safe to have out in the public. So come along, say hi.
So, after that little break, Andrew, how are you feeling after howling your stress about Diamondback out?
Yeah, nice and relaxed.
Jolly good, because it's Mick's turn to go first this week. So, Mick, what you got for us?
Slime. I got slime.
It's a good thing I'm going last then, because I've got 30-year-old women to deal with.
So, this is Volume 8 of Slime by Taiki Kawakami, with character designs by Mitsubar. And as usual, it's based on the light novel by Fuse. And we pick up where Milim, the demon lord, is hanging around Tempest, or the Nation of Monsters, as it's known by its obviously quite liberal neighbours. And Milim, the demon lord, is reining her baser instincts in. She's actually managed to help protect Tempest now without killing the offending attackers. She just disables them, which is growth for a demon lord.
Well, for her, anyway.
Well, for her, yeah. But yeah, it's more of the same. It's we've now got a Calamity-class monster heading towards Tempest. A Calamity-class. Can you imagine? It's called Charybdis, and it's surrounded by flying megalodons. See, how cool is that?
See, a flying megalodon is... The Meg would be a very different film.
Yeah. Just at the point where our resident slime, the president of the Kingdom of Monsters, needs Jason Statham. He's nowhere to be found.
And he's the president of the Kingdom of Monsters. I'm confused.
Right. Tempest is the Kingdom of Monsters, right? That's what all its neighbours call it, right? It's in the Forest of Jura. It's part of the Jura Forest Alliance.
Yeah, I got all that bit, but yeah. Wouldn't he be...
But the human nations call it the Kingdom of Monsters.
Okay, right, so it's not what they call themselves.
No.
All right, okay.
Well, they kind of do.
Guys, what if the humans were the real monsters?
Oh, you've read it then?
Have you been watching the Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame again?
I mean, I think I've been watching 90% of all media produced from, like, the conception of storytelling.
Yeah. Anyway, things things do not start well in Volume 8 because the character Phobio, who was Lord Carrion, the Demon Lord's agent, when he's on his way back, he gets intercepted by the, and I kid you not, two members of the Moderate Harlequin Alliance, who are an odd jobs mercenary outfit, and they know where Charybdis is locked up. And part of the reason that they can free Charybdis is because the Storm Dragon, that was the first thing to be subsumed into our hero Slime way back in Volume 1, his imprisonment was part of the prison for Charybdis as well. So Phobio has managed to help release this monster, and it comes along. And Milim helps defeat everything, and everybody's happy, and it all goes well. And now we're starting to get into the nitty-gritty of which demon lords are plotting what against whom. And the last couple of issues have been a little bit sort of fight, threat, rinse, repeat. But now it's actually starting to weave together as we move on, and we can start seeing where there are links between Milim, the other demon lords, the alliances and stuff. And now, so Milim's going off to tell the other demon lords not to mess with Tempest. But it being Milim and her being a demon lord, it's not entirely clear whether that's actually what she's off to do or whether she has some other nefarious plan in hand.
It's interesting because Milim's backstory is a lot more interesting than you think.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that, because I've read like the light novel series, I've read it all. And if they follow the light novel with the manga, then you'll get to learn just exactly who Milim is, because she is basically out of the demon lords. I think there's seven demon lords. Mm-hmm. And out of the demon lords, she was the second one. And is also just as powerful as the first ever demon lord, who's still alive, by the way.
Yeah.
And all the other demon lords that came after are nowhere near as powerful as Milim and the first demon lord. And the reason why she's powerful is because of who her daddy is.
Well, we haven't got that far yet. We have been introduced to, I don't know whether she's a demon lord or what, but she's talking to Clayman, the demon lord who's been plotting against Rimuru all this time.
The one with the wings?
With the wings, yeah.
I think she's a demon lord as well.
But he's asking her for a favour. Sky Queen Frey, she's called.
Yeah, she's a demon lord as well.
Yeah. So she now owes Clayman a favour, which apparently he's going to call in during the Walpurgis Council, whatever that might mean. So there's plotting afoot, and it's starting to get a bit more interesting than just here's some monsters. Let's see how they come on board as allies. There's also a sort of Game of Thrones element of building up relationships with human nations around Tempest as well, and interactions still with the dryads that sort of oversee guardianship of the Forest of Jura. But, I mean, you know, the art standard carries on being maintained, the level of humour is maintained, the little in-jokes about the production of the covers and stuff like that, they're still continuing. And it continues to be an absolute delight. So, as I say, it's that time I got reincarnated as a slime, Volume 8, written by Taiki Kawakami and character designs by Mitzvah.
Interesting thing that you might want to take note of, Mick. There are a couple of spin-off manga. One of them is based on a diary that Rimuru has started keeping. It's basically in manga form. And the other one is kind of a tourist's guide to Tempest. So a female rabbit person, has gone to Tempest, and she's basically being tested. She's been tasked to put together a tourist guide for the city.
I've only got two questions.
Yeah.
The first one is, why aren't these in my possession?
Because they're not released in the UK yet.
And the second one is, why are they not in my possession?
Again, you would have to speak to the publishers.
Presumably they're Japanese. I don't speak Japanese.
That's okay, because surely they are listening to this very podcast.
I just wrote to them in English. In English, said please. Like that every single day for the last 2 years until they released Slime in the UK. And that just sounds wrong now that I say it.
It sounds like a Sex Pistols album, doesn't it? Yes. Slime in the UK.
So, Andrew.
Right, so moving very swiftly away from this pit of filth and depravity, I have also been getting in on the Infinity Countdown action, just like Rob did, was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
I cannot remember.
Anyway, I've been reading Infinity Countdown, Dark Horse.
Infinity Countdown, that must take a while.
Right, it does.
See,
so,
you say Infinity Countdown, but I'm automatically thinking of the beginning of Thunderbirds.
Well, that's quite a smaller countdown.
Anyway, this collects Dark Hawk issue 51 and Infinity Countdown, Dark Hawk issues 1 to 4. And all of them are written by Chad Bowers and Chris Sims. The art in Dark Hawk 51 is by Kev Walker, with colours by Java Tartaglia and cover art by David Nakayama, whereas the Infinity Countdown issues have art by Gan Hyuk Lim and cover art by Scan. So Dark Hawk. I get to explain Dark Hawk now.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
Because I'll be honest, I think I've read like 2 comics years ago that had Dark Hawk in, and that still left me none the wiser as to who the hell Dark Hawk is.
Oh, see, Rob. That was even back in the good old days when Dark Hawk was simple.
Yes.
See, back in them days, Dark Hawk was a man named Chris Powell.
Yep.
He found a magic amulet that let him transform into the armor-suited birdman Dark Hawk. But turns out that's all a lie. Because as I think was revealed in later years, he's part of a group called the Raptors, who exist in a pocket universe called Null Space. And they live on a thing called the Tree of Shadows. And they can only exist in our world by sort of possessing a person, but not really possessing. Because what happens when Chris finds the amulet is it actually teleports him into Null Space and lets Dark Hawk take his place in the physical world. Dark Hawk actually being sort of a robot thing that Chris is controlling with his mind.
Can I just stick my hand up here and say, did anyone rip off Captain Marvel and the Negabands much?
Yes, that's it. It's okay, everyone. It's basically Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel crossed with Rom the Space Knight.
Yeah, and Rick Jones was involved in both things.
Well, he's not involved in this series, so screw him.
Yeah, but he got killed in Civil War 2, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he did. I forgot that.
No, sorry, Secret Empire, sorry.
So anyway, that's what Dark Hawk was. But then, Razor is the name of like Dark Hawk's actual AI that was sort of maybe asleep or sort of maybe merged with Chris's mind. Anyway, he went rogue at some point, but then Chris kind of took back control and he went back to sleep. But now he's woken up again and he's decided that basically Chris has inspired him to be a hero. So he separates himself from the rest of the Raptors in the Tree of Shadows. Because the other Raptors, they wanna come to our world and basically make it ordered by wiping out all life. Because, you know, life is scary and chaotic. But Razor doesn't want that. So he, like, breaks free and lets Chris become Dark Hawk again. Because Chris wasn't Dark Hawk by stuffing something. Anyway, then there's also another group called the Fraternity of Raptors, who in no circumstances should be confused with the Raptors, okay? They're different.
Okay.
The Fraternity, they worship the Raptors and so have made themselves armor that looks like the Raptors' armor, but isn't actually Raptor armor.
So, hang on. So, Chris Powell?
Yes, Chris Powell. He's Dark Hawk.
He's a proper Raptor.
No, he's a human.
No, but his Dark Hawk is a proper Raptor.
Yes. Unlike the Fraternity, who have cheap knockoff Raptor armor, but they want to basically help the Raptors come into our world so that they can join their ranks.
Do the Raptors have a recruitment policy?
Not as far as I know.
that they sort of have a recruitment policy in that they need, like, living bodies that they can possess to manifest in our world, unless they don't.
Okay.
Because in this, they kind of just get dragged into our universe. I'm real confused about Darkhawk's whole deal.
You sold it. You're on Comic Sage. You're not meant to be confused.
I've just been looking at the wiki for Darkhawk, and I love the sentence. In his human form, Chris Powell has no superhero abilities, though he has taken some karate and kendo lessons.
He's also a police officer now.
Oh, kendo, that's superpower.
Oh, also, turns out the Darkhawks are made in the image of Starhawk, who is a Guardians of the Galaxy character from the future, but is apparently like a big cosmic force thing that's like the natural enemy of the Phoenix.
Yeah, I remember Starhawk was kind of him and his sister in one body, which sounded a bit hillbilly to me, but apparently it works. And then the female Starhawk called Alita is in love with Major Victory or Vance Astro, as he's known.
Yeah, who, at that point. Yeah, we don't care about that because it's not that Starhawk. It's a different Starhawk.
Is it different Starhawk?
Is this Stakar of the House of Urgot that you're referring to, Andrew?
Yep, that is the original Starhawk, played by Sylvester Stallone in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
I'm very confused now.
But in this, so one of the villains who is working with the Raptors and is the head of the fraternity of Raptors is Talonar, who appeared in Guardians of the Galaxy series and the Made Infinity Countdown. See, he's actually Robbie Ryder, the brother of Richard Ryder, who Nova. Is Nova. Yep.
That I knew.
And see, he wants the powers of a god, so he needs to steal Darkhawk's gem thingy so that he can combine with it to become the Dark Star. And the gem thing contains Christopher Powell's soul, except also maybe it doesn't, because he seems to get by pretty okay without it.
Did someone at Marvel take a few too many drugs before they started writing Starhawk, Darkhawk? What are we?
I think we've established in previous episodes that there was a period where the entire staff at Marvel were completely off their face.
Yes.
It's those earthy cupcakes.
So yeah, this series is so confusing. And I think all this definitely hurts it. Because the plot is pretty simple. It's basically Chris Powell doesn't have Darkhawk powers. He gets Darkhawk powers again. He goes off to stop the bad guys who want to make a god thing to blow up the universe. But it's dragged out over these issues. I could have been done with having even more issues. Because it feels like every 5 minutes, everyone has to stop and explain just what the hell some of Darkhawk's deal is.
Oh, this sounds terrible.
The problem is, it's not actually that. Like, I quite enjoy it. Because Bowers and Sims, they also wrote X-Men 92, which I love. And yeah. This is similarly. Like, the parts that aren't super confusing are quite a fun space adventure romp. But then it gets dragged down. And also the final issue, I just did not like at all. Because it ends with basically Darkhawk and Nova. Well, I say teaming up, but they don't team up. Because Nova does the I am an idiot hero thing of yelling, I don't trust you, Darkhawk, I need to save my brother. And so we must do a punching, even though there's like a very obvious threat that needs dealing with.
Yeah.
Also the art. Like, issue 51 has good art, I like it, because it's Kev Walker art, and Kev Walker does good, fun, chunky robot armored looks that is good. But the art by Gan Hyuk Lim, it's got this sort of weird finish to it, where it looks like very digitally touched up. And
that's not a good phrase.
No, it's not a good phrase in any sense of the word. So here's the thing. If it was just that, I'd say Darkhawk is probably pretty bad, and I wasn't a fan of it. But the problem is, like I said, the Raptors, they need Chris Powell's space magic gem to do their thing. And so they need to hire a bounty hunter to kind of capture him and bring him in. But see, the thing is, they don't hire a bounty hunter. They hire a freelance peacekeeping agent. Frickin' Death's Head is in this comic book.
Oh, I like Death's Head.
and he's the bomb. Like, there's a bit, because right, basically they agree to sort of work together, because after all, Darkhawk wants to find the Raptors anyway, and so they're about to set off into space. But, like, Darkhawk's just, like, getting the, like, saying this big emotional goodbye to his girlfriend, only to suddenly get teleported onto his ship, because, you know, time is money. Also, I really, basically, this is, like, a little bit of a really great Death's Head comic wrapped around a confusing mess of Darkhawk.
See, I'd love for them to do a Death's Head comic.
Yeah, and if they did, I would definitely say that Bowers and Sims could write it.
Yes.
If they even, like, tie in Death's Head actual origin story. Because, like, they have this whole dynamic of Darkhawk is basically a robot possessed by a human mind, and Death's Head was built as, like, a mechanical body to be possessed by this, like, weird wizard dude until he got his own sentience. So obviously Death's Head doesn't like Darkhawk because he, like, reminds him of what he could have been.
Yeah.
Also, my favourite bit is, I'm just going to spoil the ending to this. Basically, while Darkhawk and Nova are arguing like idiot children, Death's Head basically, like, calls him up on the comms and says, "Hey, by the way, you guys might want to run because this big battleship that we're on, I've set the warp drive to implode and now I'm flying off of my spaceship. Laters." And that's how Death's Head saves the day.
Yeah.
So to be honest, for, like, all its many flaws, I still had fun with this book. I'm not going to lie. Anyway, I'm done because I realise I've been talking about this for so long now.
Yeah. Since
it's five issues, but there's so much Darkhawk to explain.
I'm dreading what I've got next, because since you did Darkhawk, and since Darkhawk is an offshoot of Starhawk, and Starhawk is an enemy of the Phoenix, I had to go with X-Men Phoenix in Darkness by Grant Morrison, and this collects new X-Men from 2001, issues number 146 to 154, so 8 issues. It's got art for the first 4 issues. The art is by Phil Jimenez with ink by Andy Lanning and Simon Colby, colors by Chris Chucky. And then from 151 to 154, the art is by Mark Silvestri. And you do notice the difference, by the way, with ink by Joe Weems and Eric Basaldwa, Billy Tan, Bat, and Tim Townsend. Colors by Steve Furchow, Matt Miller, John Starr, Frank D'Amato, Beth Sotelo, and Brian Buccellato. And yeah, you've got different cover art as well for all of them. But I'm not going to go into the cover art because that would be too long. Anyway, this is one that I do remember reading from back in the early noughties or around that period of time. Probably.
Yeah, I was going to say, so this is literally just a chunk of Grant Morrison's new X-Men.
Yeah, it's just a chunk of Grant Morrison's new X-Men. In particular, this chunk has to do with Zorn. Now, Zorn was that weird X-Man.
Oh, Zorn.
Yeah, Zorn was that X-Man who apparently had electromagnetic powers or something like that. Some kind of electric powers, could never take his helmet off. Turns out,
because his head was a star.
Yeah, turns out Zorn wasn't Zorn. And Zorn had played a big trick because Scott has gone on a mission with Phantom X and Logan, and they've basically decided to break into Weapon X or wherever it's called these days. Yada, 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 things go on. Zorn turns out to be somebody who's supposed to be dead, but apparently he was only mostly dead and got better again somehow.
I mean, I feel like you can spoil this since this series came out in 2002.
Yeah, I was about to. Because Zorn has sent Jean and Logan and a bunch of other people off into on wild goose chases, and he has stopped Dust, who was that slightly racist X-Man, or X-Woman, I should call her. I was never too comfortable with Dust.
Yeah, because she's the one who wears, like, a full burqa,
she wears the full burqa because apparently she's from Afghanistan and her ability is to turn into sand. Because that's not racist at all, is it?
Yeah, I feel like That's the real world equivalent of saying, like, we are the sand people from the desert planet.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's the old Pratchett line from Jingo. How do you know he was from the desert? Because he still had sand in his sandals.
It's one of those things that always strikes me as kind of weird in comics. How every single non-American superhero is based on a cultural stereotype.
Yep.
Like, how come there's not a French super speedster who's just, yeah, I'm just running fast, man.
Because you wouldn't get a French speedster.
No. Oh, if someone tried to engage their sense of urgency, they'd go, meh.
Exactly.
But no, I really want, like, just a French super lazy speedster.
Exactly. What is your hurry, my friend?
Have a baguette.
I mean, that kind of works, because he's so fast, you'd be like, eh, I have 10 hot seconds to save them. I should have another glass of wine.
I have 10 seconds to save them. I shall set off in 9.
Yeah. Anyway, back to this. Zorn turns out to be Magneto, who's supposed to be dead, and Magneto is basically a drug addict now.
Which, do you know the extra fun thing about Zorn?
Yeah?
He's not Magneto.
Yes, I know.
He's Zorn, pretending to be Magneto, pretending to be his twin brother, who is also called Zorn.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, it all gets...
I hate comics sometimes.
It all gets very confusing. So
that
anyway...
being said, everyone makes fun of that twist.
Yes.
Without taking into consideration the fact that, okay, so without that, that means that Magneto was for some reason pretending to be, like, Tibetan.
Yep.
And, like, learned flawless Chinese.
And could quote Buddhist scriptures. That was the other unbelievable thing about him as well.
Somehow no one realized that this, like, Tibetan monk has wrinkly old white man hands.
Yep. But anyway, Magneto, he's addicted to that mutant enhancer called Kick. He uses it every so often, and it's kindly supplied to him by his cronies, especially that is Esme or something like that. And he has Charles Xavier locked up in a glass case with tubes stuck to him, and he's blocking Charles from doing anything. Meanwhile, Logan and Jean are trapped on an asteroid that is heading towards the sun, because that's what happened. Magneto has decided that all humans should die, yada, yada, yada. Things go haywire, even more, yada, yada, yada. But somehow Logan and Jean survive crashing into the sun, because she taps into the Phoenix Force, and the Phoenix is back. Yeah, so what can you do?
How did it reach the sun?
Ah, it's all very complicated in Grant Morrison.
I really like this X-Men run, but it does have its problems.
That's why I said it's all very complicated in Grant Morrison. That's my answer to everything related to this. So if you have any other question, that is my answer to everything, okay? So anyway, Beast is somehow... and this was just the most bizarre thing, because there's a 150-year gap in this issue, right? Initially, Beast is on a crashed ship with the White Queen. Forgotten her name.
Oh, Emma Frost.
Emma Frost, that's it. And she's in her diamond form. And so Magneto is basically causing a stink and everything like that, until Scott appears and burns out his eyeballs, at which point he has to put on the Phantom X helmet again. But everyone's thinking, he's not Magneto. Doesn't look like his picture, does he?
Oh, no, you mean the Zorn helmet.
Yeah, the Zorn helmet, sorry. So anyway, Jean shows up, and then Professor X and everyone turns up. But Magneto has the last laugh, because, and this is the bit that I read it again, and I spat my coffee out when I was reading it, because he injects Jean, who is currently in her Phoenix Force form, with a lethal electromagnetic pulse. She is now having a planetary scale stroke. I'm like, hang on, if he's powerful enough to give the Phoenix a planetary scale stroke, something that is, you know, a force of universal scale, doesn't that then make Magneto one of the most powerful mutants in the universe?
I mean, it does make him deadlier than the sun.
Yeah, which, pardon me if I'm wrong, but The Phoenix could survive the sun. Magneto definitely couldn't. His magnetic shield, which allows him to fly somehow, definitely wouldn't protect him. Suffice to say, Logan rips Magneto a new one. A lot of new ones, in fact.
Yep. Magneto can kill a god, struggles against a man whose bones are...
Which he can twist at will. So, anyway, scene moves on to... much, much later, the art style has changed, and there is a stunning cover shot, which I never get tired of this cover shot, of a Wolverine-type character wearing a cowboy hat and this sleeveless vest-type, you know, his yellow spandex costume. Imagine the sleeves have been torn off, right? So it's like a vest. And then the tightest jeans I've seen on any male superhero. I mean, these are Dick Grayson figure-hugging.
Look, I'm just saying, it's a post-apocalyptic future. No place to bring up kids. But also, vasectomies are hard to come by.
All I can
say sometimes you just gotta make do with what you've got.
All I can say is, because this is signed by Sylvester Weems and Steve, and all I can say is, good job. That is a gay icon character, if ever there was one. You can just imagine him dancing on table pots. dancing on tabletops at Cassidy's. So anyway, this moves on. Now you have some kind of feral, teleporting blue demon type characters who sound very familiar, don't they? But these are feral. You also have a sentinel that's being controlled by someone that's being controlled or communicating with someone, and this sentinel is not normal. You also have a woman who is, she looks like an alien, she might be a robot, I don't know if she is or not. She looks like the T-1000, but female.
Oh, that's Eva.
Yeah, that's her.
Phantom X's UFO, who's also his central nervous system.
And... Yeah. You, yeah, sorry?
What?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a Phantom X. He's French, but he's not actually French. And his powers are that he's good at guns. He can make illusions, and his central nervous system exists outside his body in the form of a flying saucer.
Yep.
Which sometimes can transform into a silver robot lady.
Yeah.
All right, I've got a follow-up question. What?
Yeah, it's all right. Save the what's for what's coming next. You have this big, white, wolfish-type character wearing a cape, who apparently is the beast in charge. And I say beast because it turns out it is Beast, but he's a bad guy. And yeah, it all goes pear-shaped from there. You have other mutants who are joining in the fight and killing these Nightcrawler demon-type characters who are basically feral. And he's basically, you know, this white beast-type character is after the Phoenix Egg. Which he then hatches. Scott is lonely, so lonely, and Emma Frost is trying to keep him company.
Which happens back in the present.
Yeah, and then you've got Apollon and various others, and it all goes very, very Russian. I'm very confused as to what exactly Grant Morrison was trying to say with this, because in amongst all of this, you have, what's her name? The bald woman.
Oh, Cassandra Nova.
Yeah, and amongst all of this, you have Cassandra Nova and that brain in a jar called Martha, and they're getting involved somehow as well, for some reason, which you'll find out later, and apparently they've joined forces with Phantom X's ship, who now has some weird green thing growing out of the top of her head. The guy who controls the Sentinel, Logan, and some bird guy with a baseball bat.
That's Beak Jr., the great-grandson of Beak.
Ah, that explains the baseball bat. And someone called Corona, who is the princess of a proud people, apparently. I don't know who she is, but apparently...
She doesn't matter.
Yeah, she merges with something, and then the Phoenix is born and Jean Grey is back, but apparently she's missing 150 years, because that's how long that's been from then. And she's basically... Apparently the Phoenix Force is something that gets rid of cancerous forces in the universe, or, you know, repairs damaged universes and stuff like that. Apparently it's all part of some master plan, and, you know, I'm not exactly sure what the hell is going on. I do know Cassandra Nova gets killed, which, you know, is fun. But apparently, this is basically the Phoenix versus a bacteria called Sublime.
It's a sentient alien fungus.
Yes.
So look.
Can I have a tablet?
Here's the thing about New X-Men. How you enjoy it is you read the whole thing from start to finish. And then you go back and you read the whole thing from start to finish again. Then you kind of pick out the bits that maybe actually don't really work that well. And you chuck them aside. And then you maybe give it another read through. You do not take, like, the back half of it and just hope you'll pick up the stuff you don't get immediately.
That's my point. Unless you've read what comes before, and luckily I have, but even with that I'm still very confused, because I still don't know what Grant Morrison was trying to do with this. But even with that, you know, it's still confusing, but not as confusing. If you just pick this up, right, on its own, I guarantee you it would drive you crazy. You'd be writing on the walls, you know, you'd be licking glass, you'd just dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. That's what it'd be.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is Grant Morrison, like, the most famously obtuse writer in comics.
Exactly.
Like, he specifically writes stuff that you are meant to, like, dissect and write essays on.
Yeah. So, anyway, this ends with that scene of Emma and Scott talking to each other. And I have to question the costumes here, because this is kind of going back to 90s Image comic level costuming for the female characters. Because Emma Frost is... It's apparently a chilly day because Scott's wearing a big overcoat, but Emma is wearing a furry hat, a fur coat,
and very little else.
Yeah, very little else. Like, it's a couple of pieces of cloth covering the bits, and that's it. I'm like, is she supposed to be a stripper grab or something?
I mean, basically, the key to Emma Frost's costume is imagine a white jumpsuit, and then imagine that white jumpsuit had a big old X covering, like, most of the torso, and then someone just, like, removed that X.
Yeah, so basically.
All skin.
Yeah, basically, that's Emma Frost's costume. This ends with Scott and Emma finally hooking up.
On top of Jean Grey's grave.
Yeah, but apparently they have her blessing, because she's gone to somewhere with the rest of the Phoenixes, because apparently there are more of them. And she's gone somewhere after fixing the universe and telling Scott to live strong or whatever it is, to be happy, things like that. This has been a very confusing episode.
I think we're done.
Yes.
I still want my tablet.
I think at the very least, Mick needs to be put to bed.
Yes. Some hot cocoa, Mick. That'll do you. And an early night. That'll do you.
Can I rock myself gently to sleep?
Yes. Because, like it or not, and I will say this right now, right? Like it or not, Grant Morrison writing New X-Men is still nowhere near as confusing as Justice League versus Suicide Squad.
So, let me just get this straight. What you are telling me is that something I have never read is nowhere near as confusing as something else that I have never read.
And if that's not four pound in a nutshell, I don't know what is.
Exactly. That's it from us for this week. So if you've enjoyed what you've heard here, you can head over to our website, thegeekshow.co.
It's a lot easier to read than it is to say.
Yeah, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll find all of our other shows. You'll also find our shop and our Patreon. So if you want to show your support, then, you know, please do so. What are we doing next week? Do we have any discussion plans?
I didn't know. What do you think I do? Plan these things in advance?
It's kind of hoping you would. But yeah, we'll have something interesting to talk about next week. But until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.